Well, we continue tonight in Ecclesiastes chapter 10. In fact, we wrap up Ecclesiastes chapter 10. And I think I've almost every message, I think, just reminded us quickly with the theme Ecclesiastes 1-2. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. So that word vanity or breath, it reminds us that life is short, life is frustrating, life is frequently difficult to understand. And in this latter portion of Ecclesiastes, we're reviewing something. That even if you seek to live a wise life, which I hope you are, you still can't escape the vanity of life. Life is difficult for everyone, even people who love Christ. Life is often frustrating for people, even people who love Christ. And no matter how much you love Christ, God in His providence simply has it so that life is frequently brief. And these are the vanities of life, and we cannot escape them. So we don't want to fall into the trap of saying, well then, who cares if life is vain? Don't even try to be wise. Live like a fool. Ecclesiastes will not allow that conclusion. We still pursue a life of wisdom, even though we acknowledge it won't help us escape the vanity of life. Here's a quick review of the chapter. I won't read through the first portion of it, just give you the headings. We've talked about the vanity of foolishness in verses 1 through 3. It just takes a little bit to spoil the perfumer's perfume. And then secondly, we've talked about the vanity of foolish rulers in verses 4 through 7. And the fact of the matter is, many times, and we'll be revisiting that topic tonight, that those, this is a vanity, right? This is hard to understand. God who calls us to submit to rulers is the God who sovereignly ordains those who are in that position, and yet we're supposed to submit to them. And that can be challenging, that can be difficult. That's one of the vanities of life. So how do you respond to that? That was verses 8 through 11, responding to foolish rulers. And I've used that phrase from the British poster of World War II, keep calm and carry on. And those who trust in God's sovereignty and walk with Jesus Christ know that oftentimes we are mistreated and people do things that are not right, and yet by God's grace we still can keep calm and carry on. And then we said last time we had a discussion of foolish and wise words, all of them coming from the heart, not my words making me foolish or wise, but my words revealing the true nature of my heart. And then we come to tonight's message, the last five verses of Ecclesiastes chapter 10, verses 16 through 20. And I've called it Foolish and Wise Leaders. I'll read Ecclesiastes chapter 10, beginning here with verse 16. Woe to you, O land, whose king is a lad, and whose princes feast in the morning. Blessed are you, O land, whose king is of nobility, and whose princes eat at the appropriate time for strength, and not for drunkenness. Through indolence the rafters sag, and through slackness the house leaks. Men prepare a meal for enjoyment, and wine makes life merry, and money is the answer to everything. Furthermore, in your bedchamber do not curse a king, and in your sleeping rooms do not curse a rich man. For a bird of the heavens will carry the sound, and the winged creature will make the matter known. As we look this evening at the topic of foolish and wise leaders, it's going to be very similar to the rest of what we've seen already in this chapter. There's a contrast between living a life wisely and foolishly. There's, in a simple way we could say it, there are two ways to live. You can pursue a life of wisdom, or you can pursue a life of foolishness. And a wise person will seek to live wisely, and a foolish person will live in a way that's foolish. And if it's true that leaders are fools, then that's a horrible thing, and that's our first point tonight. The first point we'll see as Solomon addresses in verse 16, I called it the woe of foolish leaders. I wasn't sure how to word that. When Solomon says in verse 16, woe to you, O land, he's basically saying it's a terrible thing for people to be ruled by fools, but typically, frequently, it happens. Woe to you, verse 16, O land, whose king is a lad, and whose princes feast in the morning. It's a horrible thing when the king is a lad. Now, the ESV has the king as a child. The NIV has the king as a servant. It's frequently translated, this Hebrew word is servant. And it may be a reference to young people, but more importantly, that's not the key. The key is not chronological age. The key is your level of maturity. It's a horrible thing when there's a man who's a ruler and he oversees people, but he's simply not qualified to lead. He doesn't have the maturity to lead. He doesn't understand his responsibilities. Solomon in 1 Kings 3:7 referred to himself as a child. He was confessing his own immaturity, and thus he was praying for wisdom. So it doesn't have to be a child, even though we think of children typically as being immature. And then it goes on here, and there's a second point here, right? It says that, woe to you, O land, whose king is a lad, first of all, secondly, and whose princes feast in the morning. The King James says, eat in the morning. Nothing wrong with eating in the morning. It's not down on breakfast. But it's the idea of feasting or banqueting in the morning. And a wise person doesn't do that. Now, it doesn't mean banqueting is wrong. It doesn't mean a feast is wrong. And there are times we get together for certain holidays, maybe special days like birthdays and anniversaries. And we come together, we might have a banquet. We might have, for example, a wedding reception. And that's an appropriate thing. But you don't do that daily. You don't do that in the morning if you're a wise person. Morning's a time to what? To work, to study, to oversee, to plan, to commence with a productive day. The morning is not to indulge in feasting. You say, Greg, who knows that? Every wise person knows that. And so what Solomon is saying here, here's a paraphrase of a modern translation. A country is in for trouble when its ruler is childish and its leaders party all day long. Children are immature. Children seek immediate gratification, right? They struggle with the idea of delayed gratification. If you, mom and dad, would you ever give your young child a large bag of candy and trust him to just eat a little bit at a time? And, you know, honey, here's a big bag of candy, and here's your what? Your four-year-old? Thank you, mommy. I'll have one piece a day because I want to be prudent in my decisions. Well, no four-year-old child is on that level. And we don't fault them for that. That's just a reality. And what Solomon is saying is when you have a person like that, who's that immature, that person should not be in the place of a ruler, but for whatever reason, God in his sovereignty sometimes has people like that. And woe to you, O land, whose king is a lad, and whose princes feast in the morning. But there's not only the woe of foolish rulers, verse 16, foolish leaders. There's the blessing of wise leaders in verse 17. So again, it's a contrast, kind of a back and forth, verse 17. Blessed are you, O land, whose king is of nobility and whose princes eat at the appropriate time for strength and not for drunkenness. Now, the first part of that to our modern contemporary American ears can sound snobbish, right? Blessed are you, O land, whose king is of nobility. And I think some of us, we kind of rebel against that. And remember, guys, we have to put this back into its context. It is a blessing when the king is of nobility. Not because he knows more than others, but because he's been trained to lead. This is somebody who's raised in the home of nobility. He's been taught what leaders need to know. And I think we would all agree that we want people that are properly trained to be our leaders. So in our American way of thinking, I could maybe just paraphrase this. Something like, blessed are you, O land, whose leader is properly trained. How about that? And I'll even go broader than just leadership. It's a wise person who prepares well for whatever he wants to do. And if you're a person and you want a job done well, you want somebody who's trained in that profession. You want somebody who's good at that, okay? Just a simple illustration that comes to me. You know, we've had the joy of having baptisms here at the church, and one of the challenges is people in the back can't see who's being baptized. And so what do we do? Well, what we would like to do is we would like to have it so you can see on the screens a video feed of who's ever being baptized. That's kind of a complicated thing. And I wouldn't just say, okay, fine, I'm going to go out and do that. Because how do you do that and make it nice? Nor would I just grab another deacon or elder and just whoever. But we're blessed with the gentleman here who, for his profession, he deals with those types of things for a corporation here in town. And he's working on that. And it's a blessing when people are well trained for the task that they're doing, hopefully to God's glory. That's what's going on here. So when it happens that a ruler who's king, the king himself, is of nobility, verse 17, it continues, it's a blessing not only for him, it's a blessing when princes eat at the appropriate time for strength and not for drunkenness. Again, these are men who are mature enough, they're not indulgent, but they demonstrate wisdom rather than foolishness. How? Just as the text says in verse 17. They eat at the appropriate time, and they're doing it for good reasons, strength, not for drunkenness. How many practical illustrations? Let's do a food illustration. I've already mentioned what children will do with candy, and we expect that, but I like to think we get older and we mature, right? And I'm not saying you have to do life my way, but maybe I think an application. I grew up in a home where I never ate vegetables, okay? And I know some of you moms will think that's horrible. I never ate vegetables. I didn't have to. I grew up in a home where you didn't have to eat what you didn't like. I'm not saying that's good. So I just didn't have to. And I never ate vegetables. And as I got older, I began to realize that vegetables are good for you. And I began to eat vegetables. And here I am thinking, okay, I'm going to start eating salads. And then someone breaks the news to you. Iceberg lettuce is like eating candy, Greg. Or maybe better put, cardboard. And it's like, oh man, really, I'm eating iceberg lettuce. No, Greg, you got to eat something better for you, like spinach. So I teach myself to like spinach. And now I eat probably 3, 4, sometimes 5 days a week spinach salads for lunch. And I enjoy them. And you might say, I'm not there. You don't have to be there. But I'd like to think as we mature, we learn to eat things that are good for us. That's a food illustration. Can I give an entertainment illustration? Maybe when you're younger, as I have loved sports, and you watch a lot of college football perhaps, and then you get older and you begin to think about serving Christ, and I still enjoy college football much. And I'm so thankful now we have the technology that I can record games. I can watch them later in the evening. You don't have to agree. I would rarely watch a game during the day. Time is too precious. But I'll save it for the evening when it's downtime and we're relaxing and I can fast forward through all of the commercials. And I can skip the halftime and all of that kind of thing. And maybe you do something like that with entertainment. How about educational, right? Many of us had to be told to do our homework when we were young. We didn't like it. But as we get old, you've learned the value of learning and reading, studying, listening to podcasts, trying to develop yourself. And those are all marks of maturity. And even some of you I know who maybe don't enjoy reading books, you're listening to books. And I commend you for that. Because again, that's part of maturity. Let me give one more. How about spiritually? And we wake up, and some will choose to do it in the morning, and some others, either way is fine. But we engage in regular Bible reading and prayer and church attendance. And that may not be fun, F-U-N, but we realize that life is more than just having fun. And there are things we do. And these are to be the kind of people that we want as leaders, obviously. And that should be a given, even though in reality it's frequently ignored. Solomon is saying, what a blessing when you have wise leaders. We have in verse 16, the woe of foolish leaders. In verse 17, the blessing of wise leaders. And just so we don't say, and God ordains the leaders, so if they're foolish, who cares? I don't think that's what Solomon is saying, because we'll see in verses 18 to 19, there are what I believe are warnings to foolish leaders. And so we see here, third point tonight, warnings to foolish leaders. Notice verse 18. Through indolence, the rafters sag, and through slackness, the house leaks. Men prepare a meal for enjoyment. Wine makes life merry. Money is the answer to everything. 19's a little bit challenging. Let's stay with 18 for a second. It's a warning. I'd like to just put it in a positive way. Here's Solomon telling those in leadership positions, be diligent. Verse 18. Through indolence. That's a word that means laziness. It's the idea, again, that here's an immature person, and he knows things should be done, but he doesn't do that. And so through indolence, the rafters sag. The ESV has, the roof sinks in. It's the idea that I know I should be doing things, but I don't do them just out of laziness, as would be true with an immature person, a foolish person. And then the roof caves in, the second half of verse 18, and now the house leaks. And you say, why? Because that's what happens when a person fails to be diligent and lives a foolish life. Again, a modern translation of this verse. When you are too lazy to repair your roof, it will leak, and the house will fall in. I don't know why I remember this, but I remember once just a couple, and they were kind of arguing. And they were arguing about a car that no longer ran, and the engine, whatever, I don't know what happened. It threw a rod, seized a piston, something like that, because of a lack of oil. And the wife saying to the husband, how many times have I asked you, would you just have the oil changed regularly? How many times have I asked you, would you just check the oil? And I first of all thought, wow, I regret you saying that publicly. But then secondly, looking at him and watching his head just drop in shame. And I took that as an admission of guilt. That here was a gentleman who lacked maturity. Again, when my dad has taught me, you don't start your lawnmower without checking the oil. And so even yesterday, I was about to jump on my lawnmower, and what did I do? I checked the oil, because my dad has drilled that into me, and I'm thankful to have a dad who would give me that much wisdom, a little bit of wisdom in that area. And even though it's a hassle, and even though it takes 30 seconds, right? And it would be easy not to do that. Wisdom is, you know what? The lawnmower's been sitting here. Who knows? And that's the idea of this text. That a wise person is diligent. And he doesn't let things go. I thought of an illustration here. Some of you that have been worshiping with us for a while maybe thought of it. Will you look up? Will you look at our roof? And some of you maybe remember, I don't know if our pointer will even work up in the sky. Look at that, it does. These, I don't know what these are called, arches. Those are original. Every one of these plus signs was added later. Look at those big plus signs. 1, 2, 3, 4. I have lights in my eyes. I'm not sure I'm counting right. A number on each side, right? 1, 2, 3, 4, I think. Those weren't original. But when this building was constructed, people noticed from outside, our roof is sagging. You could stand outside this building and actually see exactly where those three main arches were, because the roof would sag between them. Now, again, I'm not trying to throw the builder under the bus, so that's not my point. But you know what? He should have been more careful. He should have taken the time to say, would this structure be supported? And to his credit, that the end of the story is he came back and repaired it. And he made the repairs. So I don't use his name. He would be retired perhaps with the Lord by now. But maybe that's an illustration. I'm thankful for the men of the church who saw there was a problem, and rather than just saying, let it go, it's fine, that they said, you know, we should take care of this. That's what a diligent person would do. Now, what's the cause of this lack of diligence? Well, maybe it's an attitude, verse 19. Maybe it's an attitude that reflects a lack of self-control, a lack of prudence. Verse 18, I called it be diligent. Verse 19, be prudent or exercise self-control. Verse 19 is a little bit challenging because it could be interpreted two ways. Let me read verse 19. Men prepare a meal for enjoyment. Wine makes life merry, and money is the answer to everything. It is possible that that's a positive text. And what is being said here is that government should be diligent so that people in that social structure, that country, should be able to enjoy meals, should be able to enjoy banquets. I've talked about wine before. I hope you're all very satisfied with my stand on that. I do believe it's a wise choice not to engage in the beverage use of alcohol. I realize people who love Christ will disagree with me. I'm fine with that, okay? But maybe this is a positive text that if government was working well, people would be able to enjoy life, be able to be merry, and not so much money's the answer to everything, but the money they need for things they have access to. And that is a possible interpretation. I don't think that's what's being said, but I want to acknowledge that. Others would say, no, that's really not what's going on in context. Verse 19 is the wrong attitude that is the foundation to the laziness and immaturity of verse 18. So if we take 18 and 19 in context together, it's the idea that here is the attitude that people wrongly have who are lazy and let the rafters sag, and through their slackness the house leaks. They go through life thinking, hey, we're just here to enjoy life, let's eat. We're just here to party, let's drink. And whatever we need, we'll just pay for it with money, who cares? And so it refers to the undisciplined thinking of the immature. And rather than diligently working, they're basically partying their way through life, not thinking about what they should do if they would embrace wisdom. And this is simply the way that many people live. I'll give you an example that I think fits this well. What is one of the leading news stories, I think, in the past week that has to do with university admissions? Anything coming to mind? Yeah, some of you. That there are wealthy people in our country, frequently people that are well known, I imagine, for television roles and for that type of thing, for being in movies and such. And it's now known that their children have access to very elite schools. And here's a very famous woman, a couple of them, and they have loads of money, and their children are given full scholarships to universities that are very hard to get in, and they get scholarships because they're on the rowing team, even though they've never been in a boat. You know, these kinds of things. The fencing team, even though the only fence they know is in their backyard. And there are ways to pay people money so that they could have access to very difficult to get into prestigious universities, and now the FBI is investigating that. And here, I think, is that attitude. Do you see it there? These are people, verse 18, that basically they're not studying, they're not working hard, they're not preparing, they're lazy, and who cares, right? Life is for partying and making merry, and if you want to do something, pay your way. It's fine. We have money. And Solomon is warning the foolish leaders, what a horrible way to live. You should be diligent. You should exercise self-control. You should be prudent. And unfortunately, I think we're all aware that frequently those who are our leaders don't act wisely at all. And I've given you illustrations in previous messages on Ecclesiastes from both sides of the aisle. And if you think fools hang out on only one side of the aisle, you just don't think a lot. I don't mean that as an insult. Neither party has the majority of fools in it. It's part of the human condition. It's not part of your political persuasion. You say, yeah, Greg, that is true. There's a lot of foolish people, and I see it, and I know it. Be careful, because that'll be our fourth and final point tonight, right? Number one, verse 16, the woe of foolish leaders. Verse 17, the blessing of wise leaders. Verse 18 and 19, a couple of warnings to foolish leaders. But now a warning to those who are under foolish rulers. I think that's us. Now we're going to have to deal with context a little bit. But I think there's a whole lot of people listening that would say, I believe that most of our rulers are foolish. I believe there's a lot of people who would say that. But if I think that's the case. Notice verse 20. Be careful. Furthermore, in your bedchamber, in your bedroom, do not curse a king, and in your sleeping rooms, do not curse a rich man. For a bird of the heavens will carry the sound, and the winged creature will make the matter known. If you are wise enough to recognize the foolishness of our rulers, does that make you a wise person? Depends how you respond. Because a person who is always complaining about the foolish rulers that we have would not be a wise person. Guys, you have to remember, if you embrace the sovereignty of God, if I am continually complaining about government, sooner or later someone has to ask you the question, who is the sovereign king who appoints our leaders? It is Yahweh. It is our Lord. We don't have to agree with them. Now, we live in a world, in a time, where we allegedly have freedom of speech. I say allegedly because it seems like certain political views are more freely expressed than others, and I understand that. But remember, back then, under a monarchy, if you disagreed with the king, and even in the safety of your bedroom, you cursed the king, that could be the end of your life. Because one of your children, maybe a neighbor, somebody overhears you and reports that to the king. And in this setting, that could be the end of your life. Because of your foolishness, not being able to control your tongue, not being more cautious. Now, we don't live in a monarchy. I don't believe it's wrong to be critical when people do things that are dishonoring to the Lord. We can be critical in a way I trust that would still honor Jesus Christ. But can I take us back to what I believe Solomon would suggest is wisdom? That even though we do have foolish rulers over us frequently, that we would be able to address this vanity in life with that British saying from World War II. Keep calm and carry on. And I still talk to some of my brothers and sisters in Christ who are very politically active. I'm not suggesting that's wrong. And they are in such a tizzy, such a discontent, such an uproar over the evils that are legitimate evils in our society, rather than seeing them as I would see them, as gospel opportunities. You know, I think something my mom and I have talked, my mom's a believer, my mom and I have talked about a number of times, it's when the darkness is the darkest that the light shines the brightest. And people say to me, what do you think about our country? And my first thought is, what tremendous gospel opportunities we have. Because the farther away our country drifts in the wrong direction, the brighter the cross of Jesus Christ, the greater, hopefully, people will sense the need of Jesus Christ. And what wonderful opportunities for gospel progress. So keep calm. And carry on. And I was talking to my fellow armchair in touch with reality more than me wife. And I was saying, honey, what do you think about that? Keep calm and carry on. And she says, you know, I like it, but she says, Greg, how about the end of the book? You keep telling us we also have to fear the Lord. Why don't you add that? And I said, yeah, I need to. So keep calm, carry on, and fear the Lord. Thank you, honey. Keep calm, carry on, and fear the Lord. Why are such foolish people in places of authority? I don't know. It's one of the vanities of life. Greg, if God was sovereign over all, you would expect him not to do that. It's one of the vanities of life. But keep calm and carry on and fear the Lord. Because remember where this book is driving us to the conclusion, and we close tonight with this. The conclusion, when all has been heard, is fear God and keep his commandments. Because this applies to every person. For God will bring every act to judgment, everything which is hidden, whether it is good or evil. So keep calm and carry on and fear the Lord. Worship the Lord. And that's only possible if you have a relationship with the Lord through Jesus Christ. And so if you're a person who has realized, yes, I'm a sinner and I need to be forgiven. My faith is in Jesus Christ. I know the Lord. More importantly, the Lord knows me and I want to worship him. That's what fear the Lord means. So keep calm. Carry on. Fear the Lord. And may God bless us all. Let's pray.